The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, welcome to the show. I hope you had a great weekend. We've got a really exciting show today. We're going to have Trevor Fitzgibbon back on, and hopefully we're going to finish up Brazil. And that's a big topic of discussion in terms of importance to understand what's going on with globalization and how it's founded. Now, we've gone over how these financiers go into countries, set them up to fail, buy out their, not even buy out. All they do is negotiate the depth of the debt sale. And they've gained enough power through this to actually import, determine who's going to be the head of the IMF. They got Dominique Strauss-Kahn in as an example. And while they're doing this, they're taking over the resources and utilities of the countries that they're working in. We see this going on in Ukraine, Brazil, Venezuela through the 2010s, Argentina, bought and sold. It's a captured state. Ukraine is a captured state. South Africa was a captured state. When you look at Iraq, to go in there, handle the Hearts and Minds campaign, literally set it up, run it out in Iraqi media, what do they actually get for it? Negotiating all the reconstruction. We see this with energy. It's what happened to Greece. When you look at what happened to George Papadopoulos, the reason behind it was that he was negotiating the Aphrodite gas fields. It was cheap gas. It would bypass Turkey, but the Bosphorus Gas Club wanted high prices. They needed high prices to set things up for today. Globalization is a very, very structured planned event, and it's been in the works for a long time, and it takes a lot to set up exactly what's going on with it. All right, we see outrageous energy prices today. Well, they had to start somewhere to set up for it. Ukraine kicked it off. I mean, it was just gross the way Joe Biden went about it. And Germany. And now we're all paying for this. Now they're talking about 15-minute cities where, you know, worst case scenario, you need a pass to get out. What happens if you don't work in 15 minutes from where you live? What happens then? It's actually a great way to structure society under the model they want, which is fascism. If you work in the financial sector, you need to live there. So it's going to structure pay rates from rich to poor. It's going to structure political power. It's going to structure how much the government actually needs to listen to you. Imagine going back to the 1930s with the internet. And, you know, I'm talking about the 1930s, we'll say the 20s and 30s, well, 30s. In terms of there were no jobs, there wasn't anything. And people lived hand to mouth, and people struggled, and it was called the Great Depression. Imagine that being a constant. But you have internet, so that's a good thing, right? All of this followed a track. People like Julian Assange stood in the way. And Trevor Fitzgibbon is actually an unsung hero of our time because of what he did, what he's accomplished in his work life. And we already talked about the fact that he represented Assange, the Julian Assange legal fund, Snowden, all the big players. He got Hillary Clinton's spokesman fired, which makes him a threat. He was on the inside of trying to stop the extradition of Assange and defend him. And Assange is, well, quite frankly, always a threat. What Julian Assange did, it threatened everybody doing wrong in the world. All these governments, agencies. And if you could find a way to silence that, to quiet it down, well, you've accomplished a lot. And that was the goal. Silencing Trevor Fitzgibbon and putting him out of business was the way to go to do that. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Dee Dee Denslow and the news of the day. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio, and we'll see you in a minute.
Keeping you updated on the latest.
In the car while I'm driving home.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Dee Dee, we've got TNT producer and talk show host Dee Dee Denslow with us again. And the headline reads, multiple Chinese spy balloons entered U.S. before recent incident. Now, what's going on with this? This is almost funny. Yeah, memes are just crazy.
It's so funny. It's so funny. The best one is Joe Biden walking up the stairs and then getting bombarded with balloons every time he falls over. I did find that quite amusing on a Sunday morning. The great distraction this weekend was the Chinese spy balloon story. One crashed off the coast of Hawaii 4 months ago, apparently, while another traversed Texas and Florida years ago, sources have told Fox News. More than one Chinese spy balloon has traveled through the U.S. airspace in the months and years preceding the most recent encounter, official sources told Fox News on Sunday. This counters claims by President Donald Trump, former President Trump, that his administration would never have permitted such a thing. One balloon reportedly crashed into the Pacific off the coast of Hawaii, while another passed through Florida and Texas during the presidency of Trump. Another source told Fox of four such incidents preceding the current one. The unnamed officials' claims backed up statements from the administration of President Joe Biden that Chinese surveillance balloons had traveled across the continental U.S. at least three times under Trump. Responding to those claims, the former president insisted this would never happened. It would never have happened, and accused the White House of spreading disinformation to distract from its own incompetent behavior, which may well be true. It never happened with us under the Trump administration, and if it did, we would have shot it down immediately, he told Fox News. However, senior administration officials countered that U.S. intelligence, not the Biden administration, believed PRC government surveillance balloons transited the continental U.S. briefly at least three times during the prior administration and once that we know of at the beginning of this administration, but never for this duration of time. The previous balloon crossings went undetected as part of a larger pattern. These balloons are all part of a PRC fleet of balloons developed to conduct surveillance operations, which have also violated the sovereignty of other countries, the official claimed, blaming the People's Liberation Army for the intrusive airships. Biden has come under fire from political rivals for his perceived delay in having the spy balloon shot down 7 days after it was initially spotted drifting through U.S. airspace. The balloon, which China has maintained was a civilian airship conducting meteorological research that drifted off course, was shot out of the sky by an F-22 stealth plane. And China has condemned this action as an obvious overreaction and a serious violation of international practice. George, were you following this story from your place in the Donbass, George?
Yeah, I was actually getting a kick out of it. It's, you know, and especially what you just said, the U.S. intel community believes that there were a few that flew by under Trump. Why don't they know? I mean, if you got radar that can detect anything, I mean, you can detect missiles, you can detect, why can't you detect a freaking balloon? I mean, it's got to show up as something.
Apparently they're slow moving. It's the material they're made of, and it's the fact that they move very slowly makes them more, and that the altitudes that they're at makes them more difficult to spot. This is just something that I've read in passing off the internet. I haven't got a source to offer you there, George, but apparently that's the reason why they're quite difficult to detect. And what's quite funny, really, is you can imagine the US and other advanced nations have really, really capable air defense systems, air defense protocols and procedures in place, and yet a big balloon can just drift right across from a foreign adversary and nobody notices.
Well, you know, I can just, you know, I mean, you know, let's say, you know, a fake country, we'll say Wakanda from the movie, right? Put up a balloon, put a nuke on it and fly it over. No one will see it.
And this has long been long. I first became aware of this as a capability that they were worried North Korea was developing, that they could just make really big balloons, put a nuke or an EMP device on there, a nuclear device, and just drift it across and detonate it across the continental US. I always thought that's quite
that's
funny.
Actually a thing? That's a thing?
Yes, actually.
I was kidding.
That's a thing.
Wow.
No. They've written about this. There was written about in 2017 when Trump was in power and they were worried about North Korea doing it. And actually, as we have just seen, the first thing I thought when I saw this balloon was, I wonder if it's carrying a nuke or if it's nuke carrying capable, which it clearly is. And if we've now, as I've just stated from this article, that multiple balloons have traveled across the US continent without being detected, surely China has just exposed a serious problem in defending not just the USA from nuclear attack, but any country.
It's so absurd. It's just crazy. You really can't control a balloon to begin with, where it's going to go. I mean, okay, we've got the general direction, but you're not going to get anything precision from it. So in terms of surveillance, if you want to see a bunch of cows in the Midwest, yeah, I suppose. But, the fact that you could actually fly a nuke over is just crazy. Like I said, I was just
apparently
kidding.
Nah, I mean, this was a threat that was seriously written about, and that actually it would only take a few nukes and you might be able to take out the entire electric grid of the USA. And that would be very, very serious. In fact, there's been war games done on what happens if the electric grid goes down in the USA. It doesn't turn out well for a lot of the population over a period of about a year. Survival rate is not high without electricity. And regards to not being able to control the movement of these balloons, apparently AI can elevate and de-elevate, whatever the opposite to elevate is. And they can use the wind currents to manage the direction in which the balloon travels in.
Oh,
how true
wow.
That is, I don't
okay,
know.
I'm behind on tech then. So yeah, I guess they could, because you'd have cross currents at different layers of air.
Yep.
Wow, that's exactly right.
And
that's actually brilliant.
And it was reported that this balloon was had the ability to maneuver. That was actually stated that coming out of the White House briefing, I believe.
this is just making it more and more absurd. I wonder if they're gonna. My favorite meme on this whole thing was "Happy Valentine's Day, Eric from Fang Fang." Love Fang Fang. I just, you know, the second one was Biden going up those stairs. I mean, that was just funny as anything. Now, obviously, no one saw this as a threat because they had what, 6-7 days they've been staring at this thing. They just got sick of seeing the headlines. That's about it, right?
Probably. Or they used it as a distraction because there were other stories coming out of the White House about Biden. There's a Pfizer story that was quite serious with regards to fertility. So maybe they thought, we'll just leave it up there. People will stare at the skies and they won't be looking at these particular stories. But at the same time, you can imagine that the US government are like, well, we've got a live spy balloon here. We may as well collect as much data from it as we can. And it's a case of, you know, we know that you're spying on us and we know that you know that we're spying on you and so on. And I'm not really sure what extra info a balloon could gather that satellite, Chinese spy satellites couldn't, George.
Well, I think you're exactly right once again, you know, in terms of controlling the headlines and, you know, distracting the news cycle, you know, which is... Honestly, it's, pretty much it. And, you know, it's just too bad because, you know, honestly, I didn't look for them, but, you know, all weekend long, there were the memes. And, you know, it was amusing as hell.
It's a great story. All right.
Exactly. Now, the White House, I mean, they're not, you know, you hear stories, okay, well, this is one step closer to war. A balloon. All right. I just can't believe that a Pfizer story took second fiddle to this.
And that's why they probably left it up in the air because people are more interested. Yeah. The average person are more interested in a Chinese spy balloon floating by than say, you know, the revelations that Pfizer knew their mRNA product and probably all the mRNA products potentially cause infertility after they've injected 4 billion people with it. Shouldn't laugh.
It's not funny. Well, it's just that sad. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah, laugh and cry, George.
All right. Look forward to having you back on tomorrow. And thank you so much for coming today, Didi.
Speak to you later, George.
Didi Denslow, TNT producer and radio host, and catch his show. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you later.
Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you, as long as it's not Chinese balloons. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Bruce de Torres is talking about on World Stage.
Fascinating, this former actor taking it personally when our representatives are proven to lie to us because I was a professional liar. I was an actor, but I was honest. You paid your money, you sat in the audience, and you knew I was faking and fooling with whatever we were doing on stage. We tried to make it look and sound and feel really, really real, but we earned your money because you knew that we were fooling and pretending, and I really resent those who lie. And also I'm fascinated by what it takes to create an illusion. And the Pentagon, back in, I think, 2017, admitted that they can't account for $21 trillion since 1998. With a $21 trillion budget, you can create, give, and show, and convince the world absolutely anything that you want.
World Stage and Bruce DeTorres on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A deadly virus emanating from Wuhan, China is sweeping across the globe.
Something is off.
The disease caused by the novel coronavirus has been titled COVID-19.
What we're being told doesn't add up.
It's so important in this crisis that we're in that people...
Congress passes a multi-billion-dollar bill that will bring...
There is no cure and no way to treat this illness. All we can do is wait for a vaccine.
All we can do
is wait for a vaccine.
There must be a doctor out there who's questioning this.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm the vice chairman of internal medicine.
The only chance to reduce the risks of hospitalization is early home treatment. We can beat this pandemic.
Patients actually think the virus is untreatable. There's such a focus on the vaccine. Where's the focus on people sick right now?
The pressure to suppress any hope of treatment is extraordinary.
Why the single-minded focus on the vaccine? What is that? What is that about?
That's really going to be the goal of investigative reporters to figure this out.
Unprecedented lockdowns, devastating economic damage, huge violations of personal freedom, families separated from their loved ones, all in the name of a medical emergency.
Things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine that we've gotten out to the entire world.
The hope we have of protecting our communities is to get a needle in every arm.
I am not going to follow what you are suggesting and let the virus slaughter my patients.
John, I'm watching what's happening. This is a treatable illness.
I don't think this is a matter of academic debate and confusion. What the evidence shows is that this is an organized criminal enterprise. They call this a business opportunity.
People need to know the truth.
We are witnessing the greatest organized crime in history, to the tune of trillions of dollars.
The biopharmaceutical complex is using censorship, propaganda, and manipulation to keep people living in fear. But what we need now is courage.
The Courage to Face COVID-19. Available at CourageToFaceCOVID.com.
The conversation continues.
It's ridiculous what we've allowed this group of politicians to lead us.
What the hell's going on in our country?
This is today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back. And as promised, today we have Trevor Fitzgibbon coming back. And we're going to get into what happened when he came across these regime changers as they were finishing up in Venezuela, Brazil, and the global south. This story will show how far and how deep these people are willing to go to what? Destroy any opposition at all their opposition. And the story, it sounds like what you'd see in a grade B movie. I mean, it's just crazy, but it's real. Now, I'm a TNT talk radio host. I'm primarily an investigative journalist. And I've looked into the story behind this really, really deeply. We've been talking about it. This is actually the sixth show on that. And it goes that deep, and it shows how far they're willing to go to get power and control your life. Trevor, welcome and thanks for coming on today.
Hey, thanks a lot, George. It's good to be here.
Now, last time we left off, we were starting to get into Sierra Pedraja and how you met her. I'd like to review that a little bit. You were having a company retreat in Austin, yes?
Yes. We were.
Okay, let's pick up there. Now, you were introduced to her by...
I was introduced. Excuse me, I was introduced to her. Yeah, a woman named Lucia Elaine, who worked for my firm. She was our, she was the most junior member of the firm. She was office manager in New York City. Her name is Lucia Elaine. She was from Peru. She was a dreamer. You know, had done some phenomenal work on immigration and immigrant rights. And so I brought her on when she needed work. And sorry about that. Yeah, so I had been introduced to Sierra from her, that she was one of her best friends, etc. And
now you're at the, let's start with at the retreat. Let's go through that again, and then we'll get back into Lucia Lane afterwards, okay?
Yeah, so it was a weekend retreat. It was, I believe it was like on a Saturday or a Friday. And, you know, we were all at a board retreat meeting rooms in a hotel and, you know, all together out and open and public. And this woman was introduced to me by Lucia, and she was a young mom who was living in Austin, Texas, and was looking for some contract work, and she was a good writer, and that she was looking to do some contract work. And I said, well, that's great. You know, we're in the middle of our retreat right now, but why don't you meet up with the team, all of us, later after our work is done during the day, and you can meet the rest of the team and, you know, all of our coworkers, and, you know, decide if there's, you know, you can talk to some of the other vice presidents and we can see if there's any type of work or any type of fit that could be made. And so she said, you know, that's great. And so we all met later that night. We all went to, after dinner, we all went to a bar, the entire staff. I was excited because my stepbrother, Ted, had just gotten back from Iraq, and I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. So I was really excited to see him and his friend. So he met us out. And, you know, we were at this bar seeing live music. And Sierra was there. Lucia was not there. I spoke to Sierra for a little bit, not long. But she was, you know, hanging out and with the rest of the staff and getting to know them. And after a couple of hours, I left. I wanted to go back to the hotel because I was exhausted. And so I did. And I went back by myself. And I actually said I was going to go back and get a jacket because I was cold. And so when I came back, everybody was gone. And I thought that was weird. So then I went back and to the hotel and crashed and went to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, well, there's a couple of things. Number one, Lucia, who had introduced me to Sierra Pedraja, she never showed up. She never even came out that night, which I thought was odd because this was supposedly one of her best friends. And so when I, the next morning, when it was time for the next day of the retreat, I noticed there was something kind of odd with the staff. I wasn't sure what was going on. Didn't really know what the deal was at all, but they just seemed kind of quiet and distant. And then once the retreat was over, everybody went back to their state and to their offices. So they flew home, and I flew back to Richmond, Virginia, which is where I lived. And let's see, that was on a Sunday or a Monday that we all flew and left the retreat. And then I believe it was on a Thursday or a Friday, I get a phone call from the head of my HR that said that woman, Sierra Pedraja, as well as four or five other women had all put in phone calls accusing me of sexual harassment. And they all did it within a 48-hour period. And I was pretty mortified. I wasn't sure what the hell the deal was. Like, very, it's like the earth is moving beneath your feet. You're not sure what's going on. I told my I told my managing director, who informed me of this information, to try to find out more about what's happening, and that you know, I can't operate in a vacuum, but I also understand we need to protect people's rights to be able to you know, come forth with such things. We had a very progressive sexual harassment policy and program. And so I waited and said, you know, I'm going to take a leave. I'm going to put you in charge right now because I'm the one being accused. And I said, try to find out more tomorrow and let me know. And it was a Saturday, and I had to tell my wife and that what I had just been accused of, and literally not knowing what the hell was happening. And the next day, I talked to my managing director, who informed me that enough of the staff had united against me, and that they had come to the determination that either I left the firm or they were going to the national media. And so it really doesn't leave you much of an option. It's a difficult situation because you're being told this with a gun to your head.
Yeah. Now, when we left off last week, we told you a few weeks before the retreat, Firdadja went to Paris for basically a day. And she made a point of this woman needed to get on the news for whatever reason. She called her local news station and said, "There's a riot going on. I'm afraid for my life." And she leaves Paris and goes to London. Well, the company that, the bank that's behind everything that's going on that we've been talking about, Lazard, that's where their office is in Paris. The information operation company, their offices are in London. So now this seems like a stretch at the moment. It really does. Okay, a stretch of the facts. Okay, well, I can say, well, she's going there to get paid in advance for something she's about to do. But you can say, well, this woman just went on a vacation, except for what comes next. How did this play out? What was the big things that happened next?
Well, I mean, the next thing I know is that I'm on the front page of the Huffington Post, and I'm being accused of sexual harassment. And it's primarily by this woman, Sierra Pedraja. And it's like a whole story that is written, completely concocted, that it was just too perfect. It was like, it was already written. And our conversation had been completely taken out of context. Text messages had been cut off, so the context was gone, and it just completely made it out that I was a pariah and an awful person, and that this woman had just been victimized. She had been coached and been helped. She had been coached and helped throughout by a guy named Andy Stepanian, who had worked for my firm. I had hired him. He had recently gotten out of prison from being an animal on an animal rights activist charge, and he had been working with her the whole time.
You have as much luck hiring people as Donald Trump, I think.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry to say it that way. Before we go much further, we need to stop. First, we go to the end. Pedraja apologizes for causing all this crap publicly. Everybody that accuses him either falls away or actually gets, when it goes to court, it doesn't just fall apart. The people that investigated Trevor Fitzgibbon actually apologized. The police apologized. The so-called victims actually had to pay damages. So we're not talking about something that happened. We're talking about something that made up, that was made up. Now, if we go to Pedraja's account of it, and then all of a sudden it's in the Huff Post. Now, you know, you told me when I was looking into this that you talked to somebody that worked in information warfare, and they said this something like this doesn't happen unless it's set up. There's a non-story here. Why is the HuffPost picking it up? Well, this brings us back to the bankers. We're going back to the bankers now. One of the companies that Matthew Pagassi, the banker, in all of this, who was actually behind hiring Trevor's firm for Venezuela to get a look inside and try to figure him out and Julian Assange, one of his companies is HuffPost France. And Dominique Strauss-Kahn's wife was running the show there. So if they want to destroy Trevor Fitzgibbon because he's supporting Assange, getting Assange's message out, providing a defense, got Hillary Clinton's spokesman fired and supports Bernie Sanders, yeah, it's a guy you want to get rid of. And that is the only reason why it makes sense for the HuffPost to do that.
There was definitely, you know, I'll say this, you know, I've talked to some people since all of this, and I mean, it's been a while now, and then I've been trying to rebuild my life, but I spent, you know, some time with some people for officials who said that, you know, when things like this happen, you have to think about what is a natural reaction and what is an unnatural reaction. And they said, you know, if somebody is if the head of a firm is caught or is accused of doing something bad, first of all, there's some due process. There was none of that. The second thing is that it usually, you know, it takes some time, and normally the firm stays together, and maybe a couple people leave, but they keep going after somebody has been forced out. But that wasn't the case in my situation. My situation, my clients were cut up six different ways and set up into six different new firms. The other thing that is wild to me is that, you know,
how long did that take? How fast was that process?
Probably about 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. The other thing that was incredible to me is that, you know, after this had gone on, maybe this was the end of December or so, in April, May, I get a phone call from the DC police that said that that there had been criminal complaints filed against me, and the attorney who represented them was Gloria Allred, had marched in three women to file criminal complaints against me. And I saw who some of them were from, and I was just absolutely blown away. They were literally, they were completely fictitious. And I had all the evidence that showed they were fictitious. And they waited a year, the U.S. attorney, before, you know, after the election, they waited a year before they cleared me of all allegations. But they did end up clearing me of all allegations. And I just, you know, when you're accused of something like that, you can't get work, and no one wants to hire you. And I don't know, it's kind of the most insane experience of my entire life.
Well, I guarantee that. Now, before we get into that, I want to step back a bit and talk about Lucia Elaine's phone call with the DOJ.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this was really strange. And I actually sent you the email. So there had been an email the night before we decided to close my firm. One of my coworkers, a junior staff up in New York, You know, we had offices in New York, D.C., San Francisco. And so in the New York office, while this was all playing out, you know, people would come together and they didn't know what was going to happen with the firm. And one of the staff had sent my managing director of the firm, Doug Gordon, had sent him an email saying, listen, you know, last night was tough. We all went to CJ's house where we got together and had like a Christmas dinner so the New York office could be together. No one knows what's going to happen. You should know, Doug, that midway through dinner, Trevor called Lucia. We all saw his name and his phone number light up in her phone. She held it up and yelled that Trevor's calling me. And she said, you know, that kind of thing really kind of rubbed everybody the wrong way, the fact that he's calling her. So I had gotten this information the night before the firm closed. And Doug said, why are you calling? I said, I'm not calling. But I filed it away. So fast forward a year later, after the firm had closed and after almost the close of the investigation, the Department of Justice called me, said to my attorney, we'd like Trevor to come back up. We have a couple more questions before we kind of close this out. And I come up there and he said, if he has any more evidence or anything he'd like to provide over, that'd be really helpful. So the one thing I remembered is that I had all the phone records because I owned the phones of the firm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ordered all the phone records, including that night that I supposedly called Lucia Elaine, you know, the night before the firm closed that blew everything up. And I had all of those records sent straight from AT&T to the Department of Justice. And I had a version sent, the records also sent to myself and my attorney so that they knew they couldn't have been tampered with, et cetera. Well, lo and behold, we get all the records and there was no call. I had never called Lucia Elaine. I hadn't called her in 6 months. And so there was a, she had either had an app on her phone or somebody had set her phone up in a situation so that if you or me or just if anybody called her phone, it lit up with my phone number and with my name flashing. And so, then we looked at all the phone records and, you know, I saw, I sent to you, you know, she had been in touch, you know, like 150 times text messages and phone calls with these international, you've got the name there, this international law firm that was, you know, not just in New York, but also in Venezuela and in Brazil, an assets firm and just all sorts of stuff. And I don't know the end of it. I don't know where to go. I'm just living my life right now today. But
well, what you're just saying is providing even more substantial circumstantial evidence. You know, because, okay, she's from Peru, so why is she talking to people in Venezuela and Brazil where these people are operating? Why are they going to France where the offices are, okay, for a day? Why is the banker's newspaper, the banker's online, you know, platform, HuffPost, the one that breaks the story and ruins you? All right. And the bottom line becomes, what is it about you that scared them? And believe it or not, you know, it's essentially information operations. There is quite a bit more involved with it. And it's definitely black PR. All right. It's very focused. So when you get into the military end of it, which the companies that Matthew Pagassi hired to do this certainly did. The one thing that they look for is, okay, who can either detract from our message, repel our message, or provide information that nullifies it. And if your clients are their targets, what is it that they need to do? That's the only question. What is it that they need to do? And unfortunately, that's why you went through this. Now, we didn't even get to even the real juicy part of you getting blackballed from the progressive community.
Yeah.
And that was another member of your firm that did this. Now, we spoke about it earlier in the year, but we need to remind the audience, this is how far they went to do this. Now, this guy started his own firm and took over some of your clients. Did he have enough money to start a PR firm or enough experience?
Which one?
The one that did the blackball. We'll start with him.
You mean did the blacklisting?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing that was, no, the answer is no. I mean, the thing that was, when we talk about things that are natural and unnatural, you know, when I was cleared and the U.S. attorney issued a letter stating that was Trevor was cleared of the allegations, within a 48-hour period, a blacklist came out, right, that signed by 72 national organizations, the pledge to never hire me or work with me again after the U.S. attorney clears me, right? That was done by, the person who sent that press release out was somebody who I had trained. He was on my team. And his name was Brett. And he started a firm called Unbendable Media, named in honor of me, mm-hmm. in honor of the staff at Fitzgibbon who wouldn't bend to my supposed sexual harassment. It was all incredible. I mean, it was all like woven together. By the way, just for what it's worth, when I just saw Drew Beasley was an attorney that Lucia had been like in constant communication with the night and the weekend of the takedown. He was with a firm called S&C. And another person is Brian Juracek, who was with Lennox Advisors. And, you know, you got to ask yourself, like, why is a 22, 23-year-old office manager of a PR firm having, you know, 20, 50 text messages back and forth with a senior attorney at S&C? I know that their office, they share an office in New York City with Brett Wisner, not the AFL. What's the fantastic law firm in New York? Brett Wisner represented Edward Snowden, the ACLU.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, S&C is the name of this huge firm, and it's a huge law firm. But there was just like a huge shutdown, and you know, I would have thought that after a year had gone by, that there would have been a couple of people, you know, maybe we were wrong about what happened, and maybe there was something going on there. But, you know, people don't want any part of it. People are afraid. And that's kind of, you just have to start your life all over again.
Yeah. Now, with these people that went out, now the environmentalist that was in jail, what happened to him?
Oh, he's out there. He's still been, coming after me ever since. By the way, the name of the law firm is called Sullivan and Cromwell. Sullivan and mm-hmm. Cromwell LLP. That is who Lucia Alain was in constant communication. And they're a massive multinational law firm headquartered in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Now, would being connected to massive multinational media companies help any of these people out?
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
One of the people that was bringing, the person that was bringing, that brought Matthew Pagassi into Venezuela, his name is Stefan Hooks. He's a Ukrainian Frenchman. His father, I guess, fought with Bandera. He's the vice president at Havas, as well as Euro RSCG, which are the world's fifth and sixth largest media companies, which would be really kind of nice to deal with if you're a PR person.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say? You'd have stations everywhere. So this is the level of play that Matthew Pagassi can bring on the world. Now, it's not just him. It's also the information war, information operations companies. They were working for the Clinton campaign at the same time. They were working for Ukraine at the same time.
I had no idea what was going on.
The whole start of the whole Russiagate thing wrapped all this into it, and it tied Julian Assange up with Russiagate, the emails, et cetera, et cetera. So all the way around, this makes you a person that they needed to derail. And, well, you know, unfortunately, that's the case.
One of the things that I always thought that was awkward was, and again, we go back to what's a natural reaction, what's an unnatural reaction. You know, talking to like friends of mine and even like friends, people who aren't friends with me, the reaction on social media, it was totally disproportionate. It was nuts. People coming mm-hmm. after me. There were bots. There were paid bots coming after me. It was perpetual. It was incredible.
Forget about the bots. You had security specialists coming after you.
Yeah.
We've only got 3 minutes left. This guy's been put through the ringer, okay, for a lie that was tried to, you know, they tried to wrap it up into the Me Too thing, and it certainly was not. This was to destroy him so he couldn't defend the people he was defending, especially Julian Assange, and throw a wrench into their works. Trev, we've only got a couple minutes left. Is there anything else you want to add to this?
No, I think the reason why they've continued and they keep coming, and, you know, I get photos taken of me, you know, that are tweeted out that were taken from years ago that I didn't even know I was being photographed, you know, surveillance photos. Is they're still just trying to intimidate me? I think there's a concerted effort to not have me do the work I do. And
exactly.
You know, too bad, because I'm going to keep going. And I guess that's what it is.
Now,
and thank you for your time.
Today with Trevor, thank you. We've had Trevor Fitzgibbon, who is, I mean, you know, honestly, an American hero and a hero for human rights around the world. He's represented the thought leaders of human rights movement in spades. And this is a guy you should support. Find him on Twitter. I'm George Elias, and this is TNT Talk Radio. Thanks for coming by today.